Hi, I'm Ben Trefney, news director here at KALW. We really appreciate you listening to Cross Currents, and we'd really appreciate your support during our almost fall membership drive. Please click the Donate Now button at KALW.org. Thanks.
KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Saratoga.
Presidio.
San Francisco.
Montaloma School District, Mountain View, California.
Coming up, how Oakland plans to make electric scooters affordable transportation for all.
This is the future here, you know what I mean? Like, people that used to daily commute in their vehicles every day, you get what I'm saying?
Then a cyclist's arrest prompts outrage. His supporters say it was a case of biking while black.
As we were doing our ceremonial circle, this officer walked over and grabbed my handlebars.
And we'll talk to Grammy nominee One Way Possible and hear about how he balances creating hip-hop for kids with being an actor on stage.
You know, I'm kind of a shy, low-key person, but on a stage, that's like my home.
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is next. Shared electric scooters are about to make a comeback on the streets of San Francisco. The city temporarily banned them before deciding which scooter brands would be allowed in the city. Well, now Oakland officials are deciding what to do about scooters, and they're taking a different approach than San Francisco. In a plan being considered by the city council, scooter companies can stay in Oakland, but they'll be expected to meet a bunch of requirements, like offering a low-income membership at just $5 a year. KALW's Eli Wertschafter reports.
If you think electric scooters are just a toy for rich tech bros, I invite you to visit Lake Merritt. Scooter riders are everywhere. I see this guy come shooting down the hill toward the lake with his curly fro flying in the wind.
This is the future here, you know what I mean? Like, there are grown adults that even ride this. People that used to daily commute in their vehicles every day. You get what I'm saying?
Semeda Abraha, who's 20 years old, gets a massive grin on his face every time he talks about scooters.
An electric scooter can change a person's day from sad to happy. You know what I mean?
It's fun and it helps with his commute. Abraha works at the grocery store Sprouts. He used to bike there. After the scooters landed, he sold his bike.
It comes in real, real clutch for transportation, so I don't have to rely on bus and stuff like that.
Scooter companies don't report demographic data, but a recent study showed that low-income groups are more likely than higher-income groups to approve of shared scooters.
Just anecdotally, if you travel around Oakland and see them being used, they're certainly being used by a very diverse array of the population.
Oakland City Council member Rebecca Kaplan wrote the city's proposed regulations for shared scooters.
I'm a bicyclist. I like alternative transportation. I can see how the scooters are a good thing. And I really want to make sure that as we're adding new mobility options, that we're not leaving behind the same communities that are already underserved.
In Kaplan's proposal, any scooter company that wants to operate in Oakland has to obey certain rules. So, for example, they have to provide staff to move scooters out of the way if they're parked unsafely.
And they should not trip people. They really need to not block wheelchair access.
And here's the rule that really caught my attention. Scooter companies will need to provide a low-income membership where people could have unlimited short rides for just $5 per year. Anyone who gets food stamps or subsidized energy bills would qualify. The idea is based on a similar discount for Ford Go bikes.
The Go bikes currently have a $5 a year intro low-income membership for the first year and then $5 a month after that. So that was the example from the one company that we've had so far with a permit.
But the rollout of the shared bikes discount has been rocky, and now scooters could face some of the same problems. The biggest challenge is distribution. So for a low-income discount to work, bikes or scooters need to always be available in low-income areas. In East Oakland, they're not.
So the shed is a 20-foot container.
Reginald Burnett is the president of the original scraper bike team, and he's on Oakland's Bicycle and Pedestrian Safety Commission. He takes me to the back of a public library in East Oakland, where his team has turned an old shipping container into a bike shed.
We get bike donations. Youth come here. We teach them how to fix, refurbish, customize, and retrofit bikes.
In the back, thrown on top of other bicycle parts is a bright blue Ford Go bike. Burnett says someone left it there after a recent group ride. That's because there are still no Go bike stations in East Oakland past High Street.
We don't have nowhere to dock it, and we didn't want it to get stolen and misplaced, so we got it here. We probably send somebody to dock it later this week.
Unlike the Go bikes, the new wave of scooters can be left anywhere. They don't need to be docked. So people like Chuck Davis, a 20-year-old who also works at the bike shed, can take the scooters into East Oakland.
I like the scooters, the Lime scooters. Yeah, those good. I like them. They real fun. Me and my girl was just riding them yesterday.
Davis says he'd qualify for the affordable membership. But as things stand now, he can't always find a scooter when he wants one.
If I want to start pull out my phone and go get a scooter around the corner, I can't be able to do that. I have to go to downtown or, you know, areas that have Lime scooters and Lime bikes and stuff.
Every night, people go out into the streets of Oakland and collect scooters. They charge them in their houses overnight and get paid a few bucks per scooter. Then in the morning, they go out and place them in locations recommended by the scooter company's apps.
Those areas are downtown and all the high areas for people that's working and commuting everywhere. We just need more areas out here in Deep East.
Oakland's proposed scooter ordinance tries to address this location problem, too. It calls for scooters to be distributed equitably throughout Oakland. But Clarissa Cobbinsagan, a transportation advocate with the group Transform, says the rules need to be tighter to serve the least affluent neighborhoods.
I would like to see something where these companies are held to a higher standard of making sure that scooters actually stay accessible in these neighborhoods.
The ordinance says 50% of scooters must be deployed in what are called communities of concern, a designation for low-income and underserved neighborhoods. But that designation covers most of Oakland.
So when you say 50% deployed in communities of concern, that can mean all in the Lake Merritt area downtown.
Cobbinsagan says making scooters work for everyone isn't as simple as lowering the price tag. She says scooter companies need to work with community groups to spread the word about the affordable option and how to ride safely. She also says scooters highlight a need for more bike lanes and better pavement.
In places like Deep East Oakland, people are riding on sidewalks. And they're riding on sidewalks because they feel safer on sidewalks, because sidewalks don't have as many potholes as the streets.
Cobbinsagan hopes the scooter craze has opened a window of opportunity to invest in safer streets. Some scooter companies have already pledged to fund more bike lanes in the cities where they operate. East Oakland could use it. When I took my first ever scooter ride, I went on 69th Street, which is supposed to be a bike boulevard. But it's so bumpy that I felt like the scooter was trying to throw me off. Yes. Most scooter companies already offer low-income discounts, but none of them are as substantial as Oakland's plan for a $5 membership. Rebecca Kaplan, who wrote the proposal, says there will be some wiggle room for the city and the scooter companies to figure out exactly what kind of low-income discount works best.
I do think that they will, in fact, do it. And, of course, if they don't, then they don't get to operate in Oakland.
The city council votes on Monday.
Whew. Okay, successful ride.
In East Oakland, I'm Eli Werchafter for Cross Currents.
Eli is KLW's transportation reporter. You can let him know what you think about scooters. Tag him on Twitter. He's at Radio Eli. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Feeling safe riding on the street can mean a lot of things. It can mean bike lanes and smooth roads, but it can also mean biking without the fear of being stopped by the police. In Oakland, black cyclists are more than 6 times more likely to be pulled over by cops than white cyclists. Last month, Najari Smith, a Richmond-based community organizer, was arrested by Oakland police while biking and playing loud music. He spent 2 days in jail, though charges were later dropped. Cycling advocates, activists, and political leaders have called this a case of biking while black. Now, cycling groups across the Bay Area are pushing for change. KALW's Holly J. McDeed has that story.
Some 4 dozen cyclists gather outside the Alameda County Courthouse in downtown Oakland. They're here to support Najari Smith and demand the right to bike and make noise. Reginald Burnett came with a sound system on the back of his tricked-out tricycle.
What's better, bicycles and music? Like, they go together.
Cycling activist Joanne Detterville steps up to the megaphone.
What actually is being policed is black existence, you know, because that's all these people are doing. That's all Najari was doing, basically, was existing at a particular time and expressing at a particular time.
Najari Smith steps out in front of the crowd. He wears a black visor that says, "Local hip-hop empowers people." He's the founder and executive director of Rich City Rides, a community cycling organization and bike shop. The group's mission is to empower marginalized groups through bicycles. Rich City Rides, among other things, teaches kids and adults how to fix bikes, build bikes, and ride safely.
We connect communities and people. We activate people, parks, and places. It's what we've been doing for the last 6 years.
Growing up, Smith wanted to draw cartoons. Now he says his bike is his paintbrush. The streets are his canvas. He regularly leads group bicycle rides while a speaker attached to his bike pumps out music.
It's been an advertising tool. They come out, they dance to the music, they wave. They want to find out what it is. They wish that they could be a part of it. And we say, yes, you can. You can be a part of it.
It was during a group bike ride last month at First Fridays in Oakland that Smith was arrested. At the end of the ride, Smith and the other cyclists formed a circle at an intersection. It was a healing circle to honor Nia Wilson, the black woman who was stabbed to death on the MacArthur BART platform.
As we were doing our ceremonial circle on this particular special ride for Nia Wilson, that this officer walked over and grabbed my handlebars.
According to Oakland police, the officer tried to cite him for a noise violation and for impeding traffic. Smith says he turned the music down.
I'm, you know, trying to hide the fact that I'm scared. and I'm hoping that me and the officer can come to, can actually talk things through. But that didn't happen.
When Smith didn't immediately provide identification, he was arrested. He was booked into Santa Rita jail for the next 2 days.
Bail was set at $5,000. Thought of Sandra Bland. You know, I thought of all of the folks who this didn't end well for.
Cycling advocates and community organizers were outraged. More than 1,000 people signed a petition asking for the charges to be dismissed. Richmond's mayor wrote a letter to the Alameda County DA demanding the same thing. Days later, charges were dropped. But Smith says this issue is bigger than one cyclist's arrest. Stanford University research shows that black people make up almost 3/4 of people stopped by police while cycling in Oakland.
I'm not the only person who's been racially profiled. People get racially profiled every single day.
After he got out of jail, Smith went on a weekly self-care bike ride in Richmond with a group of cyclists. He didn't bring his speaker, the speaker that brings kids and seniors out of their homes to dance, the speaker that got him arrested. Nikari Sion with Rich City Rides says that without the music, it was like a bike ride on mute.
Folks would just see the bikes, but they'd be wondering, okay, how come they're not making no noise? You know, we do a huge group, oh yeah, but this time, that oh yeah, it wouldn't follow with no Stevie Wonder. It wasn't followed with no Afro-punk music. It wouldn't follow with, you know, one of our local rappers.
After Smith's arrest, Rich City Rides and other biking organizations called for an end to the disparity in traffic stops. It's not yet clear how that could happen, but it is clear that black-led biking organizations will keep going on healing rides.
It hurt, but if it takes that moment to create policy change, then so be it.
The cyclists brought their music to this rally. Jams thump from the back of the tricycle, a makeshift sound system with wheels. For these cyclists, riding bikes while playing music is how they show they exist, how they reclaim their streets, how they demand change. So they bike away as a group, wheels spinning and music pumping, so everyone can know they're here.
All right.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Exciting,
driving, what are you
kissing for cars as we pro ballin'. In Oakland, I'm Holly J. McDeed for Cross Currents.
Holly is KELW's justice reporter. You can reach her at justice@kelw.org. We keep it lit, foot heel the strip. Do a moving down the way while slapping music from the kick. We back at it again, out past 10. Bike slapping, gang, yes, we mobbing. Hit a right on Bancroft, cutting all the traffic off. Elbow in the air while we slapping that brick wall. Two-tone paint, white on white with the gloss. Dipped in soft, little player, I'm a boss. I'm on the scrapper bike team. Snacks be the thing. Root beer flow, two-tone brown with the cream. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Whether it's on the turntable, setting the mood at his Makossa cookout parties, or on the stage, rocking a microphone, Grammy-nominated songwriter, MC, and DJ Juan Amador, also known as One Way Possible, has been a fixture in the Bay Area music scene. After years of making a name for himself on the local freestyle and battle rap circuit, One Way was nominated for a Grammy in 2018 as a member of the East Bay's kids hip-hop group, Alphabet Rockers. But the stage has also been home to Juan as a theater actor. The Bay Area Renaissance man spoke to KALW's Jen Chien to discuss balancing music and acting, as well as the upcoming stage play Pilgrim Street, in which he's featured.
My name is Juan Amador, also known as One Way Possible. I'm an MC, DJ, actor, culture cultivator.
Can you talk about how the music that you choose as a DJ, just where that comes from?
That comes just from all the influences I had growing up. I was born in San Francisco, grew up in West Pittsburgh, now known as Bay Point, but I spent a lot of my growing up in San Francisco. When my mom was younger, we used to have a lot of house parties, and those records would always come on. You'd hear Isaac Hayes and War with, Grupo Nietzsche or Hector Lavoe, or, you know, that's all the stuff we grew up on. So just being a child of hip-hop and just really being a nerd about it, just listening to those samples in the 90s and being like, what songs were those? Going backwards and you start listening to all this jazz and funk and fusion, and you just become a child of music, you know?
So you just recently returned from Brooklyn, where you did a session of your Makossa parties out there. That's something that you've been doing for a while. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how that came about?
I've been traveling to New York a lot, and I was trying to look for gigs as a DJ. Nobody was giving me gigs. So my buddy had a store, and he had a backyard. I'm like, you know what? Let's just throw a party back here. I'll come back every month. I'll fly on my own, whatever. You know, we'll just see what happens. And it kept building 50 to 100 to a couple hundred, and then it became this big thing where, like, I don't know, like 1,000, 1,500 people come out. There's two feelings you get as a DJ that are really cool. You play a song that everyone loves and they sing along to. I love that feeling. And there's also the feeling of playing something no one's heard, and they love that because you're giving them something new. And I love them both. But I love the feeling of giving you something new and something different.
So you're known in the Bay Area as an MC and a DJ, but also as an actor.
Yes.
You've been on stage a lot.
Yeah.
Is one of those your first love?
That's hard to say. I think I would have said, if you would have asked me a couple years ago, I would have said MCing, just because that's what most people knew me as, but and I was very successful with that, like winning competitions and battles and things like that. But I don't know. I love it all. I think the new thing is I'm trying to create, I don't even know if maybe it's no label or a new label for all three of it, all three of them. And they should just be one thing. Instead of saying, do you love doing this? No, I love being a DJ, actor, MC, and we're going to make up a new name for it. And that's what it'll be.
What do you think is the thread that ties those things together for you?
I think it's the exchange of energy with the crowd, like all three of those. Like, especially as a theater actor, you feel it and you respond to a crowd or what you're giving them. You definitely do that as a DJ and, of course, as an MC, because it's, yeah, all those three.
It strikes me, though, that the people that you're having conversations with in those contexts can be very, very different. You know, like a lot of live theater has an older, whiter audience. And like we were just talking about your party, Makossa, it's a younger, black and brown partying audience. So can you talk a little bit about that, like the different kinds of communication that you have or how you feel on stage in each of those environments?
Well, I've been really lucky because as a theater artist, when I started as a kid in Pittsburgh, I started with a group called Teatro Locos, and that was Chicano theater, and that's who we played for. We played for a lot of Latino brown people who have never seen theater or they had very limited experiences with it. And I think early on I wanted to be an advocate for that, which is actually part of the reason I stayed away from theater for a long time, because I didn't relate to any of the themes or the audiences necessarily. Not to knock that, that's great for people that do it, but it just didn't resonate with me. So
what exactly did you feel that you were missing in other theater contexts?
It wasn't welcoming to the audience that I was used to when I was doing theater growing up. I wasn't seeing the faces in the audience that I saw growing up. If you're not a theater kid, I think and you grow up, and maybe you don't have tons of money or whatever. Like your experience is going to theater, like, well, we're gonna take you to the Christmas play, or, you know, and half the time, you know, the teacher's just telling you to be quiet and sit in your play. You know, it's such a disconnection. But yet, I've also done shows where, like Tree City Legends that I did with Campo Santo, or just doing the old teatro skits where I see people completely open their eyes and they're like, oh, this is theater too. I didn't even know that I could be a part of that.
Well, let's talk about the new play that you're going to be in. And again, full disclosure, my partner is directing this play.
Yes.
It's with a different company, but mm-hmm. It's called Pilgrim Street.
Yes.
It's written by the renowned local playwright, Paul Flores.
Yes.
And it follows the struggle to reunite families in Stockton who've been separated by ICE, foster care, the school-to-prison pipeline. It's a lot of stuff. Tell me about your involvement in this show and what it means to you.
It's set 20 years in the future, and basically tech is arriving into Stockton, which has a lot of parallels to San Francisco and the Bay Area and what's happening now and how that affects people. So I got cast to play the part of Carlos, who is someone who just was released from being in prison, and he's trying to figure out his way and trying to reconnect with family. It's in the future, but it's really not, it's not too far-fetched. Stockton is has a lot of similarities to Pittsburgh. It reminds me a lot in the way that how people make their money, how people get caught up in the system. It's a lot of the same things, and I've been to Stockton a lot growing up. It's been great to take on that part. I love the cast. I love the crew. It's exciting. It's a story that needs to be told, and I'm glad that, you know, I think a lot of times we focus in on the New York story or the Los Angeles story, even the San Francisco story, but we forget the towns like Stockton where these school-to-prison pipelines and, you know, a lot of things are happening. They're getting passed over a lot because we don't even notice it. I want to make that connection with people. I want to bring them in and know that their stories are just as valid and as important.
That was Grammy-nominated songwriter, MC, DJ, and actor Juan Amador, also known as One Way Possible, talking to KALW's Jen Chien. You can catch Juan this weekend in the premiere of Pilgrim Street, which will run at Z Space Theater in San Francisco from Thursday through Sunday. That piece was produced by Tarek Foda. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.